Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we're in Kings chapter 22. We finished actually with the death of Achav, but we'll go back just a drop, just for really the final, verse 34. And there's the idea that every bullet has its address. Is that the what we decided? And so here, Achav had taken special pains to not look like a king and dress just like a regular soldier, because he knew they'd be aiming for him. And what happened was they just shot a random arrow and into the enemy camp. And there's no such thing as a random arrow. In other words, with Hashem, everything that happens has is bashert. It's for the Hashem, it's part of the plan. And not only that, he was wearing body armor, but somehow the arrow caught him right in between the two body armors. And so there's the idea that a person has, they can't, you can't fight against your fate, you can't fight against Hashem. When a person's time comes, then that's what's going to happen. Now, Achav was a very smart king overall. And so the question was, well, what convinced him to go into this battle? What would have made him do it? So we had before that the spirit of Navos, the fact that he had murdered his neighbor, and then had taken, not only did he murder him, sometimes people commit murder and they feel remorse. Here he murdered him, and then he had a party on his property. He inherited his property. He murdered him to take away his property as if nothing was wrong. And this is what brought Hashem's final anger against Achav to play. So the lesson, though, is that he could not escape Hashem forever, and that the arrow came and it found him, and it got him. That's lesson number one, that we all, you know, people have, whatever is expected to happen. Sometimes a person is in battle and everybody around him gets killed and they survive, and other times they're the only casualty, and that's what happened over here. The interesting thing is, that's lesson number one. Lesson number two is that as long as a person's alive, it's not too late for them to do things that will be a benefit to them. And over here, Achav, even though he was injured, he didn't want to give up the fight, because he didn't want to see, he knew that if people knew that their king was hit, then the soldiers would not have the heart to go into battle. So he propped himself up over there in battle as he was bleeding to death, because he wanted to save Jewish lives. And so there was as we said before, Achav, we like our villains to be all villains and our heroes to be all heroes, but it doesn't really work that way. In other words, our heroes make mistakes, and our villains, if there is such a thing, they have good qualities too. Achav himself went back and forth. We said that ultimately he had the wrong spouse. In other words, the Jezebel, if a person has the right team, has the right, then they have a chance. But if the wife is a bad influence on the husband, or the husband is a bad influence on the wife, then things aren't good. And that over here, she was a terrible influence on him, and he was potentially a great king. Or we find that the king of Yehuda, Yehoshaphat, was a righteous person, and his mistake was in getting close to Achav, because he felt that he could do something for him, that they could unite. We mentioned, according to some people, they made a shidduch together, like that they intermarried in the families, because he felt that he could speak to Achav, that there was what to speak to. So 34, v'ish mash v'kesh l'suma, and just happened to be a guy let an arrow go, v'yakesh v'melech Yisrael, and out of all the people, who does he get? He gets the king, bullseye. And where does he get him? Bein HaDavakim, right in between the two. You know, you couldn't aim for that. You couldn't imagine a better bullseye. Or Bein Eviyam or L'Rafo. So Achav, when he's hit, he tells his chariot driver, Hapa Yad V'otim in HaMachana Ki Chalisi. He says, oh, I don't feel so good. You know, take me back. The Talmud Milchama V'Yamahu. And the war went on that day. But the king, even though he was at the back, he stayed in his chariot. He faced the enemy. And he died in the evening. And he bled into his chariot. 36. According to many people, we won the battle, actually. It's not clear. It doesn't say that the other than this, it doesn't say that it was a big defeat or not. It doesn't really deal with that. Everybody goes home. There was no reason to fight anymore. But it doesn't mention any other casualties. So it's not so clear. And the other king, Jehoshaphat, he escapes fine. He does fine. So it's just, we don't really know the rest of the battle. But that's not important to us. For history, what is important is that the arrow found its mark. 36. And as the sun went down, everybody heard that what had happened, and the message was, "Let's go home." Which is also, it kind of tells you about the folly of the fight. Nobody really thought this was an important battle, because as soon as the king died, it was like, "Who needs this? Let's go home." There's so many wars that are like that, you know, we'll go to Vietnam, we'll go to Korea, we'll go here, we'll go there, Iraq, whatever. And there's valid reasons for going, but wars, once they start, they have a life of their own. We don't know how to end wars or how to where they begin and where they end, and we forget what sometimes the original strategy changes. And one of the beauties of the Six-Day War was it was only 6 days. You know, it's like, the Yom Kippur War was much longer. It was, every day to hear casualties is awful, like for a Jewish heart to every day, to know that, that there's a mother lost a child or a father, lost, children lost a parent. It's just it's one of those, really, war is really awful. So over here, once the king died, everybody said, "Let's go home. Let's go to our city, let's go to our land, let's get out of here." It's just interesting that it throws that in, like on 36, that it was like, the king's dead, let's go, even though there'd be a new king, but there was no reason to fight the next day. They buried him in Shomron. And 38, and they washed the chariot by the water, and the dogs licked the blood. The dogs like blood. Apparently, it's something interests them.
Wasn't that the prophecy that the dogs
would
drink of his blood?
That was the prophecy. And last week we mentioned that Judaism has special value or dignity to the human body. That after a person passes away, they gather the fluids or the blood or whatever. That they, that this kind of thing shouldn't happen. But Acha, because of the curse, this is actually what happened when they washed out the chariot. Could be they didn't even know, weren't so much aware of it, and not only that, the Yelocha Klav Mesdama Bazonus Rachsu, and it mentions also that there's a question here on the wording. The word Zonos actually means prostitutes. That's the way I translated it yesterday, that they were washing there by the river, also in the blood or near the blood. But there's a few different interpretations for that word. It just sounds so strange, like, where they washed out the chariots next to where the prostitutes were. The Acha was not that moral, because of his wife and the different customs that they had. This translation actually says they washed the weapons. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they got that from.
This one says that Jezebel had the pictures of harlots painted in his chariot to stimulate him sexually.
That is out of left field somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Right. There's always a bizarre part of the things that sometimes you don't know, you don't want to know,
Did I say too much information?
Right.
Yeah.
But there is something here, with this word Zonos Rochetsu. They washed the, according to that meaning, was on the chariot. There were these pictures, and the blood was on those pictures, and so. It's just the image that a person has to get is that this person fancied himself a king of Israel and a leader, and in the end he was a great sinner and he caused a lot of people to sin because he couldn't make up his mind, and because he allowed his passions to overcome him, and so in his end, his blood is licked by the dogs, and his blood is licked is on top of these images that are on his chariot, and so it's like the ultimate indignity, like the. He did whatever he did was in order to gain respect or to gain that people should remember him, his legacy, and what they remember was washing the blood off the dirty pictures of his chariot that they found. You know, that's the he didn't this end was because ultimately he was he blew it. He wasn't the figure he could have been. It could have the Jewish people would have been different. See, the tragedy is that he built up the people. He was he built up the cities and he fought battles and he again as a villain he had good parts to him. If only he would have used them all in the right way. You know, that's really the there are a lot of great people that that have failings. You know, just reading about this guy, the International Money Fund guy, the one that was He probably was a very bright. They said he was candidate to be president of France, but he's he has big failings, just big weak points, Yeah, so that's true. Yeah, that's right. right. So, you kind of have to be able to learn the figures that way, that Achav had his good points and his bad points, but the tragedy is that the bad points defined him. At the end, his wife's influence, if you remember, she's the one that did in the neighbor. She wanted the garden, and whether or not he went along with it, or he allowed it, or he should have known where it came from, or even after it happened, to have the callousness to go into that garden and enjoy it, that was the ultimate thing that sealed his destiny. These kinds of things might happen with other people, but in the Jewish people, we don't, Hashem doesn't allow it. 39. And everything else about Yaakov, now, he was well known for his wealth. One of the things that he did is he made one of the first houses of ivory. Which ivory it comes from Africa. It's very expensive, but he was a king that had very wealthy, and so he built an ivory palace. And the Kol Ha'ir Asher Bana and all the cities that he built, Halo Hingsuven Adibre Yevin the Malchus Yisrael. You can read all about him over there. Now, verse 40. Vishal Achim Yabosav, and he died and was buried. Vimlach Achazia Beno Tachtav, and his son is Achazyahu. Verse 41, V'yashav ben Asam Melech HaYehuda. Now, meanwhile, and we haven't done this for a while, we spent a lot of time talking about Achav. He was an important figure. Really, in the downfall of the 10 tribes, we get a picture of the 10 tribes. There are a lot of people that can't make up their mind in life, that one day they go to the temple, the next day they go to the, they go to the bar or to the movies, to the church, so to speak. In other words, they can't make up their mind which camp they're in. In other words, one day they're moral and everything is good and fine, and then the next day they go out and they do things that they shouldn't do, right? So that, in a way, defined the 10 tribes, that they were good points to them, but they were fickle. They couldn't make up their minds. They weren't... Yehuda is known for their loyalty to the Torah and to Judaism, the stick-to-itiveness. We're going to see that when the 10 tribes go into exile, according to most views, they disappeared. They assimilated. They just weren't strong enough in their convictions. B'Yoshafat ben Asa Melech HaYehudi was king on Yehuda b'shnas arba l'achav melech Yisrael in the fourth year. 42. Yoshafat ben Shloshim v'chamesh shanim b'malchut. He began his kingdom when he was 35 years old. V'asim v'chamesh shanim b'malchut. He was king for 25 years, which is a pretty long time. V'shem imo azuvu bashuchi, and this was his mother's name. It's an interesting name that his mother has. Not clear if that was really her name. I'll just give you in the Hebrew, the word azuva means rejected. Shuchi means sent away. So there's a question here: what the story was with his mother? What the story was with his mother. I saw something about it, but I don't have that commentary with me. Let's see if I can find it. But the Hebrew is a It's too coincidental that her name is Azuva. Azuv means like to reject, and Shochi means like this, sent away. Many times there's more to the story that's very interesting, but it may not help us in our lesson. But there's something here about his mother. Okay, 43. And he went like his father Asa did, lo sar mimenu. And Lasa Sayyid, he's one of the great kings that did what was good in Hashem's eyes. We have this terminology, Yeshar means what is straight. The big book of Jewish ethics, it's not called keeping the Torah, it's called Mesilas Yesharim, the path of the straight. They sometimes call it upright. A good person or a proper person is somebody who's straight, who's, you know, has integrity, has not, you know, there's some people that technically they didn't do anything wrong, but there's a certain crookedness to them. They're not straight. They're not honest. They're not, when it wants to describe a king that's doing right, well, he found the leniency to do this, and he was okay. Technically it wasn't so bad if he did that. No, he did yashar. He was upright. It was straight. He didn't veer. Like sometimes people, they take a detour. They know what they're supposed to do. Well, meanwhile, they have George Bush had a few years where as he was he was an alcoholic for a while, and then he got back to his family traditions. But he took a detour. He didn't have. It wasn't like his whole life he was. Straight, and there were things. A lot of people, but as a king, he did what was right and was straight. Sometimes someone will come to you and say, "Can I do this?" There's nothing wrong. Technically, there's nothing wrong, but the question is it yashar? Is it straight? Is it the will of the Hashem? And sometimes it's straight in our eyes, but it's not straight in God's eyes. If you look in the words, it says he did what was straight. But Einei Hashem, in God's eyes.
It doesn't become a question of morality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. But a good king is somebody that that understands what Hashem would like it, the way Hashem would like it. He's not looking for leniencies. He's not looking for other. He wants to do the will of the Almighty. Sharp?
Sharp.
Is that a compliment or not a compliment?
No.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's not,
okay.
He's not breaking the law.
I see.
But sharp, meaning, people
rough edges.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And unfortunately, when you meet someone who's straight, it's something special, It's a unique thing when there's somebody that has that, integrity and just wants to do the right thing. 44, Achabamos. Now, again, there's always got to be but. He did everything, but there's this one thing that even the good kings had trouble with, and those were the bamos. The bamos were the backyard barbecue, so to speak. People had these little private altars in their backyard. They, for religious reasons, if they couldn't make it to the main sanctuary, they wanted to at least have an offering at home. The Avos had done this when there was no Jewish people and everybody was like, they had their own private backyard altars. But once there was a central place, it's almost like there's some days where you really don't feel like going to shul, you don't feel so well, and you could daven at home. But once you have a shul and everybody's there, so you don't want to separate yourself from the group. So technically, there's nothing wrong, in staying home and doing it on your own in your own place in your own. But it doesn't. These kings couldn't get rid of the bamos. That far they couldn't go. One of the problems with the bamos are is when the people were serving Hashem, they made offerings to Hashem. But if they wanted to serve the bamos, they could do that too. They could serve the idols at the bamos. It was easy to switch. In other words, this is one of the problems of the internet. And that is that there was a time that if somebody wanted to do things that were improper, they would have to do it in a way that other people were likely to see them. They had to leave their house to do it. Whereas now, somebody in the internet can do it, and nobody will ever know. And that's what's happening. There's free will. And so there's a certain percentage of people that if they had to go to one of these adult entertainment places, they wouldn't have done it. They was too far from their home. But they corrupt themselves because they have access to it. So this is what happened with the Bamos. Because they had these little backyard things, if somebody would come by and say, "Hey, what you doing?" He'd say, "Oh, I'm bringing a korban to Hashem." And really, he was experimenting with the idol. They were tempted to experiment with the idols. They couldn't get rid of it. But as good as the kings were, that apparently they couldn't go that far. Odam is Adam Mekatrim. People still, they offered incense and they. It uses the word the people. Here it means like the simple people. Okay, verse 44. Vishal Yoshafat, Imeluk Yisrael. Vishalem, I'm sorry. And Yoshafat made peace with the king of Israel. He was a peacemaker. It was very hard. All these years there was civil war between the breakaway kingdom, and he made peace. He initiated the peace, even though the king of Israel was a breakaway from him. Right? In other words, the kingdom of Israel broke away from the house of David. Yoshafat made peace with them. He tried to influence the Jewish people in a good way. That's why he went up to battle. We mentioned that it could be he was punished because in the other book that talks about these events, that's called Dire Hayamim, that's the Chronicles, that's at the end. So there it actually says that he should not have wanted to make peace with a wicked person. Now, with peace is a two-way street. If you make peace with somebody that's a good person, so it's a good thing. But if you make peace with somebody that's doing bad stuff, then so apparently his desire for peace went too far. He made peace with the it actually says he made peace with the king of Israel. You know, Jezebel isn't the one that, you know, Ahab and Jezebel, that's not the best ones to make peace with. What happened was, as a result of his making peace, that his descendants married into the royal family of Israel, and we're going to see later that they take up the ways of Jezebel, that they infiltrate the kingdom of Yehuda, and the whole seed of David HaMelech almost gets wiped out because of the. So you got to be careful who you make peace with. You don't want to make peace with Jezebel. There's a certain ruthlessness that enters the through that shidduch that's going to happen. But he had good intentions. We mentioned that Shlomo HaMelech also made peace with everybody. That's why he took so many wives, and he made peace treaties with Egypt. And Jews really love peace. We're willing to do a lot for peace, but historically, sometimes the wrong peace isn't a good peace. 46. V'yesedi v'yoshav g'vuroso, and if you all the rest of Yoshafat and his greatness, isher asa v'ashem yocham, and he had lots of wars too. Halo etzuvi ma'sefi divar yamim, those are written in the king books. V'yesedi akadosh nishuvi me'asa aviv. Now, there was still some immoral behavior found in the times of his father. You know, some people will say that's the, as long as you have people of flesh and blood, you'll find that there's a sin, you know, the possibility for sin. And his father, who was a righteous king, tried to eradicate it, but he actually went further than his father. And that's a great thing if a person can build on what his righteous forefather had done. So he went and he got rid of the Avi Ber Menorot. 48. Umelech Ein Be'edem. Now, meanwhile, on the other side of the country, instead of where Syria is, where Jordan is, that's where Edom was. Now, there's the idea in the Chumash that when Yaakov does what's right, so he's on top of Esav. And when Yaakov sins, then Esav will be on top of him. So during this time, we had righteous kings. There were no kings in Edom. They didn't have their own leaders. Melech and Edom, Nitzav Melech. They appointed leaders over there. Yoshafat Asa Anias Tarshish. Now here we have some mystical things that over time we no longer know what the full intent was. Obviously this was important to them because it's listed here. But it doesn't seem to us, we don't know what the deeper lesson is. He made a bad business venture. Yoshafat, what he did was he made ships to go to Tarshish. Lelechus Ophira, to go to Ophir to get gold. He was interested in wealth. Below Holach. But in other words, he made expeditions to get rich, and it didn't work. Kinishbur Anias, the boats broke. That soon got here. So they invested in if you read about the Middle Ages, when the people were exploring, that was what the one of the big things countries did is they sent explorers. That's why how they explored America. That's how the original America was named after an explorer.
The Vespucci,
right? And all the early Spanish and Portuguese, and so really the Jewish people also sent out exploration missions, trade routes, and so he went for the gold. He tried to get these boats to get the gold, this was the part. Now after he didn't succeed. Apparently he didn't have good shipbuilders. So Oz Yomer Achaz Yehu Ben Achaz. So his partner, his friendship with Achaziahu, the king of the son of Achav, said, "Yeshava Yocha Abdi Abdecha." He said, "You know, you guys, you don't have good shipbuilders. That's why they broke. I'll send over some of my guys, and this time we'll be successful." Below Avo Yoshava. Yoshava said, "Thanks, but no thanks." He realized, I guess, that Hashem didn't, you know, the pursuit of wealth has its limitations. There are a lot of good people that get stuck in the rat race. In other words, they work so much that they forget to spend time with their families and to time with their shuls. And because it's important to have the gold, but sometimes it's not important to have it at all expense. You know, to forget everything else. So some people say that's what was the problem over here, that he started getting too much into the profit making, so Hashem broke the boat. You know, they didn't want Yehoshaphat to spend too much time with them. 51, Vishkav Yehoshaphat Nivosav, and he was buried with his forefathers, Vikavri Mavosav Be'ir David. Vimach Yehoram Beno Tachsav, and his son Yehoram took over. 52, Achaziah ben Achav Moloch al Yisrael. Now we get back to the king of Israel. So actually he was king for a very short time. Hashem had very little patience with him. His father at the end of his days regretted what he had done. And so there was some hope that the next king maybe would be better. But actually he did evil. Verse 53, and when a person... It's interesting that sometimes Hashem has patience for a person, there's hope, but here apparently there wasn't much hope. Yasara b'nei Hashem. And he did what was evil in the eyes of Hashem. V'yerech b'derech aviv, and he went like his father, u'b'derech imo. It's so interesting, there are very few mothers that get mentioned, but Jezebel, she takes the cake. it'd be one thing if he... some people say he was like his father and like his mother, right? That's exactly like... He had the worst of both worlds. And not only that, Uvaderek Yerovim ben Nevada, you know, he was like Hitler and Khomeini and, you know, all the rest of the Haman all put together. Now, there were kings that were evil privately, but they weren't evil publicly. But he was evil in that he caused the Jewish people to go off. Asher Hiktes Yisrael. Actually, I left off something interesting. One second. Okay, yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, so he went, therefore Hashem had very little patience to him. V'yavod es ha'baal, and he worshipped the Baal v'shtachavulo, and he bowed down to it. Bowing down means like conceding power to it. There were some people that worshipped the Baal out of curiosity. There were some people that went there because there was a good party. The people, when they worshipped the idols, they knew how to party. They really had... The food was good, yeah. They had these ox roasts, and they had these wild orgies. And so, you know, some people like the entertainment. But vishtachvulo means like he bowed down to it, like he accepted it. Vikasas Hashem, and he got Hashem angry. Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel. Kakol Asher Asa Aviv. And it was just like his father. He was a chip off the old block in a bad way. And so we're going to see that Hashem had very little patience with him. And Hashem was going to is going to get him back. So if it's okay, we'll start the next book. Just we'll review a little bit. They broke this up simply because it was too large for the printers, and the Christians broke it up. It's not really a... I always tell you that the joke that they say about... in Israel, there's two burial places where they say Samuel was buried. So the tour guides take you to the place, and this is where the great prophet's family was buried. Fine. And then a few days later, they take you and they say, well, this is where the great prophet was. So wait a second, a person can only be buried in one place. So they say that was Shmuel Aleph and that was Shmuel Beis. But the books were divided in two, but they're really the same. When the Christian printers started to organize record the books, the Bible, they divided them for their own purposes into different sections and different. A lot of their sections really have nothing to do with. They didn't go out of their way to divide it in a bad way. So we record the way they divide it. There's nothing wrong. I mean, there was a certain logic to how they divided it. They tried to make it uniform. They tried to, but it wasn't divine. And so sometimes they goofed. They divide it in the middle of a thought, or really in the wrong. It was just eeny meeny miny. Some person just decided to. And so there really is no. We're really. Otherwise, we'd make a siyum and we'd have a nice party today. But you are allowed to make a siyum when you do like something significant. So some people would, and it is significant to finish a book. That's very significant, and it's a good thing for the new year to be able to say we did Malachim Aleph. That's a as we mentioned, that so many times we start a good thing and we don't finish it. So that's a so it's with our. But now we're going to do the real finishing of the book, and we start Malachim Beis. Yishamoah b'Yisrael. Now, after this king that we're talking about that's really bad, so Hashem has a way of getting back at kings. And one of the things he does is he causes their enemies to fight against them. So Moab, who we hadn't heard about in really several hundred years, starts to rebel against Achav, Achrimothai, after the father died. And this should have, the kid should have thought, like, all these years I had no problems, and all of a sudden I have problems. Maybe Hashem is reminding me of something. He didn't get the message. And this is, when things happen, we're supposed to, even though we don't know, like sometimes Hashem makes things happen to people because they're righteous, and he just wants them to pray, pray more, and then sometimes things happen because Hashem wants us to ring the alarm, to ring the bell. Last week we read the Tokacha in the Parsha, which is the rebuke. One of the reasons that comes before Rosh Hashanah is because it's supposed to wake us up. We're supposed to, when things happen, when there's a hurricane, when there's an earthquake, so we're not supposed to walk around and say that we're bad and Hashem doesn't like us, or because we all try very hard, and who knows, it could be that Hashem it wants us to get a very big reward, and He knows according to the effort is the reward, and therefore He makes our life challenging, or it could be He's trying to wake us up, and so that we always try to use events when they happen as. To try to use them to improve and to become better, and so here Hashem tries to wake this king up before he's going to get him killed. So first he causes the neighbors to act up. That doesn't help. So then he gives him an accident, and this is what happened. He falls off the second floor. Now I don't know what exactly happened here. He says there was like a lattice in the upper chamber, but. In those days, they didn't have such good medical attention, and so he fell off the second floor in Shomer B'Yocho, and he got sick, and he just didn't know if he would get better or not. They didn't know how to fight infections. They didn't have medications, and so he fell, and he didn't seem like he was getting better. So what does he do? V'yishak Molochim V'yomerlim. So he gets messengers, and he says to them, L'chu darshu abalzvuf. He says, you know what? Go ask the idol. They have good fortune tellers there. They have. I noticed it's interesting. In more than one place in town, they have these kind of people that on their house they have a sign. We'll read your fortune. What do they call it?
Palm readers.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I always knew of one, but I was surprised recently to see that there's several. Like, you think people would be smarter than that?
There's a woman on off of La Vista on the way down to Cheshire Bridge Road, just before you get to Piedmont. She has been there, I think, almost as long as I've been in Atlanta. There's been that sign. I don't know if it's the same woman or someone who's taken over, but there's somebody there who has been in business for years and years and years.
This one place, it's a house of like broken down, And so, like, if this person could foresee the future, why don't they tell you what stocks to pick or something? You know, like
this place has been there for as long as I can remember.
Uh-huh.
It's where the last little place that we've been
and there's one on Howell Mill. It's just amazing how many...
120.
Times are bad there.
Yeah, so I guess people...
that's what it is. You know, when people are looking for answers...
They need a job, so they... Right. Oh, so that's what's the problem over here. That here he's the king of Israel, and what does he do? He sends to the soothsayer called Baal Zebub, and he's the god of Ekron. Ekron was one of the Palestinian cities, was called Ekron.
Baal Zebub, isn't that a fly?
Yes. So the name of the god was called the god of the fly. So it's not clear if there was like a big bug, you know, like a
Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, yeah, that's the that is different. So I don't know. It's really difficult to know. What's interesting, the archaeologists study these things, and so today you could probably study, you know, why they worshipped the fly. You know, did they? Was it a god? Was it a you know, they worship cows? That you hear. Never heard of somebody worshiping a fly or the some people say this was like a very low life kind of god. You know, it's one thing if your god's a lion, you know, your god's an ox, you know, but a fly, a bug, you know. And that was part of the reason why Hashem's anger was over here. So here he's a Jewish guy, and what does he do? He sends over there to the god. There were all kinds of stories in the 60s where it was popular for young people to tour the world. People then, that was the thing to do, was to take a backpack and just go all over the world. And you should know there was a very good part of that, and that a large number of them, luckily Israel's in the world, and so a lot of the Jews, after they went to India and they went to Turkey, and they would stop in Israel. And there was a science, when I was in Israel during the 80s, where people would go to the wall and try to figure out which tourists were these kids with the backpacks. And these kids were kind of like experimenting. Well, I'll try this, I'll try that, you know. And a very high percentage of those kids became observant. Because they were in Israel, they were exploring the world, and they had outreach groups that were set up, and they would go to the wall every day, and they would look around for those kind of kids, and someone would go, "Hey guys, how's it going? And, you know, do you have the time?" And then one of them would say, "Oh," and then he would say, "Would you like to go to a yeshiva, or would you like to..." And Eshet Torah, which is at the wall, originally was built for that purpose. Now, what's happened is, it's for whatever reason, it's not happening. Like, young people today don't just want to take a backpack and run. Most young people. But in the 60s and 70s, that was like the thing to do. And there were hundreds of them that became religious and went to those yeshivas. And they used to joke, we used to call them walnuts. I had my brother was kind of going through the hippie stage, and he had a group of friends, and he had two friends. One of them became religious. One of them was temporarily religious. You know, it was like he looked like a hippie, and then he became like a Jewish hippie. You know, like the which okay. You know, there's but the idea was that I forgot what I was going to express by that. One second.
Well, he went all over the world and saw all these strange...
Oh, right. So, you reminded me. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm getting old. I forgot what I was going to... The point I wanted to make was that a lot of people went to the... is it in India or in Tibet, where they're well-known for philosophers, and they go to mountaintops, and they many times there were stories where people would go to speak to the great, you know, philosophers and the Tibetan monks. And then they would speak to some kid named Schwartz or Goldberg, and they'd say, "Master, I've come here to discover the secrets of the world." And the guy would say, "What's a nice Jewish boy like you doing over here? Go to Israel, you know." Like, and there are a number of people who had that story, where they would say to them, "Don't you realize that, you know, you're from a great people that has what to, you know, like you're Jewish and you're trying to find out what we have?" And they were told that from some of the I'm not sure if it was the Tibetan monks or if it was in, or maybe they told Ben Gurion that. I thought there were certain people that it was like popular to explore Eastern religions because the Judaism, they just remember the bar mitzvah where it was more bar than mitzvah, and they never realized that you could, and a huge number of them, and again, I remember at the time very well, you'd be surprised at how many people in every community today are products of that exploring, and they explore Judaism also. I don't know about today's youth whether they explore in the same way or they. He went to explore these gods. He asked the Gentile gods, and let's see verse 3. Malach Hashem diber Eliyahu Tishbi, and Eliyahu, who's our heavy hitter, he's our top man, and so Hashem is very angry at him if you send Elijah to go get him. So Hashem sends Eliyahu, Kuma Lelikris Malchay Melachshem, go and tell him, Dibaleim, and say the following, Hamabli Ein Elokim Yisrael, you think we Jews don't have our own God? You think we don't have Hashem? Atem Hocha Lidish Baal Zvuv, Elohei Ekron, you got to go to the God of Ekron, you got to go worship the fly god and ask him what's going on? There's a certain, chutzpah to that. Like, it's one thing if you're not a believer, it's one thing if you like the orgies of the idols, but here, you seek out the will of Hashem, and what do? You go to the Baal Zvuv. So, verse 4, Lekein ko amar Hashem hamita sharlisa sham, and Hashem said, guess what? The bed that you're on, lo tered mimenu, you'll never get up again. Ki mos tamos, you will surely die. That's the message. V'yelech Eliyahu, and Eliyahu goes to deliver the message, which we will find out about. But the idea is that sometimes people look in the wrong places. Like they'll search everywhere, but they won't search their own religion or their own Hashem, or they won't go to the source that can help them with the problem. And that gets Hashem angry. That should be our first response, is always to seek out Hashem and ask for his help and to find the answers from.
What do you think these monks in Tibet who tell the young Jewish people, mm-hmm. Why are you coming here? What would motivate them to do that?
So some religions feel that different people are meant to go to their own roots. In other words, people have their own spiritual roots. And so they would say that, I'm saying from a point of view of religion, they would say to them, you should explore your own religious, a Jewish boy from New York sitting on a mountaintop pretending that he's going to...
Just the basic empathy with the people, or the basic seichel in the situation?
I would guess that other people would, they want to say maybe they themselves also were aware of the truth, or that they themselves, some of them were Jewish, a lot. There was a time where there was a very high percentage of the cults were Jewish. They said it was much higher than the general public, because Jews are seekers. And what happened is that Reform and Conservative really destroyed the Judaism. Like that, their Judaism is very shallow. It's not very knowledgeable. It doesn't allow for people to go very far. So young people, just if they wanted to go somewhere, they would seek other religions, because the American Judaism was just very materialistic, very not all Reform or all, but by and large they weren't impressed with it. There was not a developed, with an observant Jewry, if a person is into mysticism, you can find plenty of mystics. If you're into philosophy, you find plenty of, if let's say you're conservative or Reform and you're into mysticism or philosophy, you can't go anywhere. Where are you going to go? You're going to go to Cincinnati, Ohio. You're not going to find within that new form of Judaism which they're trying to create. So naturally they went to other religions, and not naturally, it's a terrible thing that a Jewish child would have to, if that's what they're looking for, they should. Where I grew up in Ohio, if a child was went to shul a lot, the conservative Reform would send him over to the Orthodox, because they would say, if you are into religion, that's where you belong. You go over, if you want to go once a year, you go Reform. You want to go a few times a year, conservative. You want to go more often, that was the way they perceived it. It was more of a convenience kind of thing. It was, it was like there's Judaism light and there's Judaism heavy. But there was at least an advantage to it, that if somebody wanted heavy, they would be sent there. They'd be said, all right, you may want to try, whereas today, they don't communicate in that way. It's not the same.
Religion.
Let's have less then.
So for the next 2 weeks, anyway.
Yeah, well, the next 2 weeks, and then there'll be like a 3 week break. There'll be like the in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. I mean, sorry, in between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, and then the week of Sukkot. And then the question will be the Monday after Sukkot. Probably not.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.